Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
The Hard Shoulder with Kira Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Domestic abuse doesn't always leave visible scars, and while awareness has grown, many survivors still suffer in silence and their stories remain hidden as Women's Aid continues to its work supporting those experiencing domestic abuse and highlighting the realities behind the statistics. We're joined now by Women's Aid CEO Sarah Benson. Good evening to you, Sarah. One of the reasons we wanted to talk about this was there's a very interesting piece by Mary Carolyn in the Irish Times over the weekend where she documents an ordinary sort of, I'd say, sitting of a domestic family law court, a domestic violence emergency sitting. And the stories that were told and that she recounts, they're not the dramatic, grievous bodily harms. They're not the things that make the headlines. They were smaller stories of largely women who were afraid within their own home, who were crying in court, women whose car keys had been taken, who they had no access to their own money, who they couldn't control the television, they couldn't use the remote control. Little small incursions into their daily lives that made their lives intolerable and unbearable, but are smaller than the kind of stories that perhaps make the headlines. And we thought we would talk to you about the backdrop of domestic violence, because we hear the dramatic, often tragic tales when something has gone horribly wrong. But it's a pervasive issue that exists in homes and families around the country at a much lower level as well.
Yeah, good evening, Kira. Good evening to your listeners, and thank you for having me on. I think, you know, I would commend Mary Carolyn, who's a regular presence down in Dolphin House Family Law Courts, and reports on stories that, because of what's referred to as the in-camera rule, those who are actually experiencing those lives, those who are seeking protection of the courts, they're precluded from actually sharing what's going on because there is a privacy regulation. And so, you know, when Mary shines a light on these things, we get to get a little snapshot of what is happening in district courts across the country every single day of the week, where people are trying to get civil protection to try and constrain the people who should be loving them, respecting their children, who they're living in fear of instead. And, you know, when we see the headlines, and we've had some desperate and tragic and awful headlines in recent weeks, in particular, Women's Aid does maintain the femicide report for Ireland, and we have lost 8 women this year to violence. But the stories that we hear, and our colleagues, you know, who do our outreach support service, our team who run our high risk support project, our helpline, which has nearly 38,000 contacts last year across our services, we're hearing the stories of the things that lead up to and can be the escalation to what then can become, you know, the worst of tragedies.
Yeah. I read that piece, and there was one woman described that, and she was crying in court, and she said she's living on eggshells. And do you know what? It was interesting, because the smaller scale controls that were being exercised over her car keys, the remote control, financial, all of those things, it painted a very clear domestic picture of somebody who goes home from their work at night in fear and gets up in the morning and goes back to their work again in fear. And it isn't drama. It isn't that kind of headline grabbing sort of things, but it's, it's a small, ordinary life lived in fear in the place that should be your sanctuary. And I suspect that because the individual acts are not dramatic, although they add up to what must be an awful existence, but because they aren't dramatic, I suppose, does that contribute to people thinking perhaps they won't be believed if they talk about it, or perhaps that they it might make them think it's harder to explain exactly what's going on?
I think it's a little bit more the latter, Kira, because you're right. What we still, to a large extent, in Ireland and globally, often, you know, when we think domestic violence or intimate partner abuse, the mind leaps immediately to things like physical abuse, sexual abuse. And these things are very real risks and very real experiences. But where there is physical and sexual abuse in an intimate partner relationship that is abusive, there is also all of these other forms of abuse as well. They don't happen in a vacuum. And what we do have in this country is a criminal offence of coercive control. It's relatively recent. It commenced at the start of 2019. But it's a game changer for us in helping the legal system, in helping our communities understand what is domestic abuse. And coercive control, which is, you know, kind of the beating heart of a domestic abuser's playbook, is lots and lots of different patterns of abusive behaviours, which in and of themselves may not, each one on its own may not constitute a criminal offence. But when you take them together and you consider what you've just, you know, painted a picture of there, from somebody's first waking moment to their last moment before they go to sleep, that every thought is filtered through, how is he going to react to this? What will happen if I speak to this person? What if I'm late with the dinner? Oh my gosh, you know, I didn't manage to get the children to bed on time. He's been in my phone. What if he sees that message? Just everything is filtered through how somebody else is going to react. That is utterly exhausting. People change their behavior. It's referred to as a liberty crime. It shrinks somebody's world. They stop seeing people. They stop talking to people. Their whole sense of self-esteem and confidence can be absolutely eroded, because other forms of abuse include that kind of emotional abuse, blaming the victim for what is happening to them, telling them that it's their fault, that they're worthless. And that takes its toll. And countless women I've spoken to who've been through years and years of abuse, including physical abuse, will say that the trauma and the impact and the thing that they have to rebuild in terms of themselves, their sense of self, is as a consequence of all of those forms of abuse, less the physical violence. And we need to recognize that we can see these signs. They can be subtle, but people's behavior changes. Somebody doesn't have the same sunny disposition that maybe they did. Maybe they aren't showing up for family events. Maybe they're hypervigilant to their phone. What has changed since the relationship started? And that's where we can, if we're vigilant, actually spot the signs. And it's where we must, as a community, actually proactively look at being a support to anyone who might be in a coercive controlling relationship, because it can feel impossible to leave or get support.
It struck me very much, Sarah, reading it as well, that whilst many of the perpetrators were indeed partners, husbands, intimate partners, all of that, a lot of the people attending court looking for protection, looking for help, had adult children living in their home with them who were abusive. And that struck me as must be an incredibly difficult road to navigate.
It really is. And I should probably pause and just say, if anybody listening is affected by this or is worried about somebody, you know, our National Free Phone Helpline is available 24 hours a day, every day of the year. And it's 1-800-341-900. And we can also signpost to local services or our colleagues in the male advice line. Whilst this is a distinctly gendered issue, it can happen to anybody. And we are seeing, and I think that our housing crisis is probably symptomatic of this, is that we have adult children who are in some cases terrorizing both parents. It is still a minority, but it is a significant minority of the applications that are being made for protection. And what is just incredibly painful, we have people calling us, and you know, they're terrified of their adult child, their sons, but they also are parents, and you know how terrible to feel frightened of your own child, but in these cases become extremely extremely dangerous, extreme, yeah. where people have to make these choices.
And I would imagine because they are parents, on some level, they feel that sense of parental responsibility, despite the fact that they are victims of their adult child. They nonetheless have, I'm sure, a degree of conflict about doing anything about it. I don't know how people unravel that in their heads and their homes.
Yeah, I think it is complex. But I also, if it's your intimate partner as well, if it's your spouse, you know, there are those complex feelings of you want the behavior to stop, but you want to try and protect the relationship. And that's why it is so difficult to extricate yourself from an abusive relationship or an abusive dynamic. And, you know, coming back to my earlier point, that is why, you know, we really need to recognize that for victims of domestic abuse, but also victims of sexual abuse, to seek help, you know, is incredibly difficult. People will suffer in silence.
Yeah.
It's only when they get to, you know, a place of extreme stress that they may seek the courts, but they will be the minority. Most will try and muddle through, but that can be transformed if a friend, a colleague, a sibling, a parent, notices that something's going on and opens up a conversation. And a lot of people lack that confidence to do so. And, you know, one thing we do have on the website womensaid.ie in the Get Training section is we actually have a free online e-learning tool for friends and supporters that anyone can take to try and build that confidence in how can I help somebody if I'm worried about them? How can I support them? How can I be careful not to do the wrong thing? And the good news is that you don't need to have solutions. It's good to know about specialist services like our own. But the key thing is to say, you know, I notice something has changed, or you don't seem yourself, you know, is everything okay? And to open up that conversation and to believe them and listen to them and then ask them what they need. And that is, as I say, transformative to prevent people suffering in silence.
Look, thank you so much for joining us this evening on all of that. That is Women's Aid CEO Sarah Benson. And that number again, if you have been affected by any of the issues, do contact Women's Aid, 1800 341 900. If you particularly have been affected by what we've talked about, that number is there.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.